Honorable Code of Honor, welcome today. Thank you.
Chair, just waiting for the last gentleman to sit down. Last year, I raised the issue of retired or boarded SAPS members, some of whom were literally starving, having not received their pensions or taking up to a year to receive the first pension payout or zero compensation being given for being injured on duty. I'm hoping to hear that the matter has now been dealt with. There were many people involved, and that the relationship has been sorted between the SAPS and the Compensation Commission. And I raise this because last night I was contacted in connection with a helicopter accident in 2010 in which seven SAPS members were killed near Pretoria. This is the time of Celebi and President Mbeki. Now, Mrs. Khos is the widow of one of the detectives who was burned to death. And Celebi, I cannot call him anything else but his surname, Celebi and President Mbeki made promises to the families of the deceased, none of which have been kept. The families have been fighting in court for 4 or 5 years, and it seems that the forensic evidence shows that the pilot was drunk. Now, the police have made offers, then withdrawn offers, and there seems to be this back and forth. And this widow says she's staying awake at night wondering she can't pay her children's school fees. Is this really how we treat the families of deceased SAPS members? The man gave 22 years to the service, and his widow can't sleep because she can't pay the school fees. Really, issues like this cannot continue to come to me, and it just breaks my heart. So I would ask that matter be looked at as a matter of urgency, and I'm hoping that the pensions and the payouts for people who've fallen in SAPS buildings in lifts and had backs injured and things, they receive nothing. And the Compensation Commission had collapsed, and it's a whole issue, but I'm not interested in issues. I'm interested in people who are living on one piece of fruit a day when they've dedicated their lives to the SAPS. It can't go on. Then cybercrime. It's a massive silent crime. I've been banging this drum for about the last 5 years. Our banks are losing hundreds of millions of rands in a minute. That's gone. Oops. But they, of course, keep silent so as not to lose consumer confidence. We have widows losing their life savings to scamsters. It's massive. Yet your cybercrime unit is so small, they could actually meet in the parliamentary lift. It's this tiny. And the number of experts you have, the ones you've not hired straight out of jail because of their brilliance, well, those I can count on one hand. And yes, you have hired people who are so brilliant, they're jailed for it, but no one else can beat them, so you hire them. I think it's a great strategy, provided you keep a very tight watch on them. I've worked with a number of these members over the years, but I want to know what practical moves you're going to take to move this unit into the 21st century. What are you going to give them? Don't tell me they're going to go on with a little handful of experts trying to solve these massive global crimes. And then finally, crime has damaged our national psyche. The fact that for example, car crash victims, as we've seen in the last few days, are stripped of their goods as they lie dying in their vehicles, descended upon by looters, and not a soul arrested, of course. They stripped the car around the corpse. That's what we've been reduced to. That's what you're up against. You're up against children who will throw boulders off of bridges to kill drivers for fun. That's their entertainment for the day. Now, where is the drive that's going to tackle that? Because arresting an 18-year-old who is part of our now damaged generation of freeborns is too late. Children must be trained on right and wrong from ages 2, 3, 4, 5. By the time they're 7 and 8, it's too late. Now, keeping communities safe is crucial, but working with them and training them, training at schools, training at churches, speaking everywhere you can is utterly critical. So I would please ask that you speak to that and tell me how you're tackling this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. General Vuma and your team, you're welcome to respond. I also want to welcome the Secretary of Police, Mr. Alvin Rapier. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, as well as Honourable Members, for the questions that have been posed. We are going to be responding with regards to the questions in this following manner. The first question that was asked that deals with the qualified audit, I'm going to request General Skete to respond to it. The shortages of personnel in crime intelligence, General Ngwenya will respond to it. The one with regards to the overtime payment regarding Northern Cape, I will deal with that one. The court issue, the case with regards to this sexually harassed employee, the chairperson has requested that we provide a report in that regard. I will defer that to the report. With regard to the utilization of communities and the informant, I will request General Zumane to respond to that. Maybe let me just pause there. General
Skete,
can you
speak? Thank you, General Vuma. General
Skete,
welcome.
Thanks, General. Chair, on the CITA network assets part, and I think, General, I don't know on the performance part, but on the financial part, it was the CITA network assets. You will remember that during October, we provided you a plan with activities, timelines, and dates. That plan is basically being driven by CITA and assisted by SAPS. In terms of the 14, 15, 15, 16, and 16, 17 financial years, where SAPS purchased network assets as a result of CITA not being able to do so, those have been incorporated. We've already tested them in our interim financial statements. On 14, 15. On those prior to 14, 15, 13, 14, and prior to the inception of CITA, they have had very good progress in this regard, in the sense that those activities have been worked off, except six, where CISWE had issues with some of the activities to be performed, and which will be performed in February. Then also we will be seeing and have a formal feedback. What I've given you, sir, is bilateral feedback. On the 7th, next Friday, we will have a full-blown meeting with CITA to have the formal progress regarding this matter, and also Dr. Moapi. I don't know why Fridays. Then one Friday ago, we also had a meeting with with Dr. Moapi, the CEO of CITA, in order to discuss certain aspects in this regard, because it might also appear that in the current financial year we will not have a delivery mechanism for network upgrades per se, which is a slightly different aspect, but the common denominator is, again, it's a network aspect. So it was good project. The project is on target, sir. The ARS, which is basically to a certain extent the CITA Asset Register, it stands for Action Request for Service, and it contains a lot of information of those assets according to which they render services to us, are also being audited. Because remember, we will share that data and incorporate it into our financial statements dependent upon the transfer in terms of Section 42 at the end of the day. But there's still quite a lot of work today, because if you look at those timelines that we gave you, it's basically very short intervals and things that have to be performed. The intention is to have it still completed. We are exerting quite significant pressure. In the meantime, we're also looking at the BA to address that whole issue, the business agreement, not the service level agreements, so that we have a clear understanding between us and CITA. Yeah. This is your job, this is our job in terms of this. So there's a number of activities running, sir. It's a big project because it's volumes, especially on the CITA side and so forth. But I think what we will do is, after next Friday maybe, to send you through, maybe, if I may take the liberty, send you through a written report according to those timelines for you to be able to, with a glance, see the comparativeness, if you so desire, sir.
Good. Senator, General Vuma, maybe on the performance issues, who's going to speak to that? Thank you.
Chair, as we indicated when we tabled the action plan, we've implemented the action plans in the respective environments in terms of the internal controls and the processes, etc. We also went to the nine provinces under the leadership of a Deputy National Commissioner to engage with station commanders and cluster commanders and up to provincial level on the performance indicators, the audit findings and the controls that needs to be implemented. So that process was finalized. We also engaged with the provincial national divisions on the same issue to identify where the problem lies and what actions needs to be implemented. We did report yesterday to the audit committee of SAPS on the progress that we've made. The relevant divisions where the audit findings have been made did table the progress that they've made. We will also, similar to what General Schutte said, within a week or two be able to provide you with a progress report on the actions that we've implemented. The reality, unfortunately, Chair, is we are currently busy with the interim audit, and they've conducted audits at six locations already. Good news is we've managed to clear ORS. We had a clean audit as far as that environment is concerned. But there are other environments that are still problematic. We are currently, because it's still part of the interim audit, and we have the current opportunity to address that, we are working against the clock to see if we can clear that. At the end of the day, not being pessimistic, I want to believe that we will be able to clear most of the audit findings, but whether we're going to get a total clean audit, I cannot guarantee that at the moment. Thank you, sir.
But is the pocketbooks and the recording issue being dealt with?
Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. The issues of pocketbooks is not in its totality cleared, Honorable Chairperson. There has been consequence management taken in various provinces regarding the matter, but however, it still sticks its head out. I also had an engagement with my colleague, General Mugwenya, that the issue of illiteracy is one of the problems. She will need to undertake an audit and see how many are there of our members that still can't read or write, because that also is a problem that exacerbates the situation. But yes, we are with the provincial commissioners waiting for the last report recently. I mean, the further progress report recently, to see how it is we are improving. Thanks.
General, I mean, on that one response that there's members of SAPS who can't read and write in 2018, I don't buy that. I'm astounded. But let's give the other members the opportunity, Honorable Molabatsi.
You see, Chair, that statement is very, very worrying.
Mm.
We've been hammering the issue of pocketbooks for since time immemorial. And today we hear it's still not done. And it's very worrying, Chair. We must have a commitment. That is the only way you can monitor the performance of your officers. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Kala Barnard and then Honorable Imam Sheikh on that issue, and Honorable Isma Bailey as well.
Thank you. Chair, I'm absolutely shocked to hear someone say that we still have members who can't read or write. I understand that certain members were brought into the SAPs from the old era and places where there were mud schools and they had zero education, but millions have been spent by SAPs on adult education classes, millions and millions. And now we hear, I'm not too sure how many of our members can't read and write. What does that say to the people who pay enormous taxes to pay your salaries? I'm absolutely stunned to hear in this day and age, so many years after democracy, that we're hearing that there are SAPS members who can't read or write. How are they still in the SAPS? How are they there? You're supposed to have a matric to get into the SAPS. And surely the people who were brought in from that era have long retired. So how is it possible? Are you letting people in with forged educational qualifications? That's the only possible explanation I can come up with. I'm most interested to hear what you come up with.
Madam Sheikh, Honourable Yambele, and then we close for the responses.
Thank you, Chair. It's very, very disturbing to hear this, you know, and this matter has been repeatedly tabled. Now, the question that arises is how do you measure performance of these SEPs officials if you don't even have a book, if they can't read and they can't write? I mean, with all the measures that have been put in place, and like my colleague spoke about adult education, ABET, why has very little or nothing been done to actually educate these people so that they can play a role, a positive role? Now, what impact is this having on your service? The fact that you have so many of these officers that do not have any education or very little education, they can't read and write, what impact is it having? I mean, maybe you need to actually explain to us. And I think the question, I think, the answer I want to hear is there is obviously a chain of people that you report to be able to, and let's take a particular, let's assume they're working in a particular police station. I don't know what numbers you're talking about in each specific, and I don't know what titles they own or what positions they own, how important the positions that they own, are they just at the low level or at the higher level or whatever it is. But if no progress has been made whatsoever, does these commanders of the station or the superiors at every level not report to management and tell you these are the challenges we have so that you could intervene? Maybe you need to explain that to us. Thank you.
Billy and Honourable
Sheikh. Chair, I think I must really cover it by Honourable Sheikh Imam's intervention, because I'm going to ask about the systems. Surely if the systems are operating effectively, you should be able to detect either at the intake and recruitment points or in the performance assessments and review points that somebody has illiteracy or low levels of literacy, and then you make the intervention. It's baffling and very concerning, because this is how statement taking gets compromised. And then it has a knock-on effect with investigations and the quality thereof, and then we can't get convictions. It's a real problem.
Thank you, Chairperson. Following up on that is that we hear that some members can't read or write. Do we know who they are? Do we have numbers? Can we please hear how many members at present in the services say they can't read or write? Thanks.
So to the chaps, thank you, General.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson and members. Of course, what one discovered is, as I said, is some. During the course of duties, one visit various police stations. So that's where one picked up that in certain places or stations, there is this problem. It's a reality that exists. Hence, I asked my colleague to say, do a national audit so that we can know what is the magnitude of this problem. So it's something I discovered now over the festive season. So we are going to undertake that and obviously remedy the situation. Of course, it can't be people that came now in SAPS. No, it's people that came from over the years. Thanks.
Honourable Bachi, yes.
Ambassador, you are really worrying me today. You only find out in December. When we're talking about pocketbook, ever since, I can't even remember, ever since when, you this is very worrying, Chair.
Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm disturbed now. But you remember every time you are raising this thing that you are not going to the station, you are not visiting stations, because all these problems are in the stations. And this thing that you are saying, it's right, I know it. But please, can you fix it? Thank you, Chairperson.
I see a lot of hands. Members, can we just keep it you know, yeah. because we've got still two presentations yeah. and this afternoon's program. Yes.
Yeah. Very, very quickly, Chair. Please give us a time frame when we can have that audit report on how many and your interventions. But give us today a time frame so that we can expect it. If it's 2 weeks, in 2 weeks.
Mr.
No, Chairperson, I think I'll be obliged to concur with what Honorable Mbele raised earlier on when he said that it's better maybe to first identify what kind of a problem do we have with our policing as a whole. Because, I think we will continuously be held back by these things One. Maybe we will need maybe some kind of synoptic analysis of the whole structure. Where are the problems? So that we can then be able to actually say, how do we fix these things? It's a simple thing. There is no doctor who can prescribe to you medication even only if that hasn't actually diagnosed you correctly. Even these broad strategies that were given, they will just remain like what have been bombarded with sometimes back. Because you might find that they are not necessarily addressing exactly the core issue of the problem. Thank you.
Yeah, I would like to know how you're going to conduct this audit. Because it seems to me a simple email sent to every station commander in the country saying, how many members do you have who are illiterate? Would get you an answer by 5 o'clock this afternoon. If, however, you feel that certain station commanders are covering for people who are friends or relatives or whoever, what are you going to do? Sit people down and do literacy tests? Or are you going to take their word for it? Yes, I can read or write, and they turn around the corner and they can't. What are you going to do? This is a massive issue you should have dealt with when it was targeted the first time you paid out the fortune for adult literacy classes. You should have been on top of it. To just notice today that, oops, those adult literacy classes that we paid for didn't work is absolutely shameful.
If we can, as a committee, maybe in 2 weeks' time get a synopsis of what is the problem countrywide, you know, in terms of that issue, because the dilemma is if your, especially in visible policing environment, if your pocketbook system doesn't work, if you, it also relates then to statement taking. So your whole system of, that's why some police stations are reluctant to take statements or take complaints from the public. So it's a thing that escalates. And the dilemma is, if we listen to the National Commissioner's new strategic vision, but we don't deal with these basic issues, ensuring that the members are able to deal with those basic tasks that was indicated in the Auditor General's report, it's going to be very difficult to ensure that this plan is successful. So you will have, on the one hand, first-class system running, but in terms of the delivery vehicle, you won't have the possible human resources. So I think it's critical that we get an update. There must be a proper HR analysis done, and what is the steps going to be taken to improve it? Because if we've got a repeat again in the AG's report on that issue, it indicates that we're not turning the system around. So that's quite critical. Let's get the responses from SAPS on that issue, and then we'll continue with the other questions. Thank you, General.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and a very good day to Honorable Members. I want to assure the Honorable Members that in terms of our current recruitment process, we have systems that are in place that ensures that those that are coming in are members who meet the requirements, and amongst others, it's the matric certificate. We also have a process of ensuring that we do the quality check. In terms of those who are alleged to be illiterate, it was alluded to by my colleague last week while we were in Hammersdale. I would want to agree with Honorable Kola Banat that if there are any, it will be members who are towards retirement. We will be doing the skills audit. we will be doing the audit so that we're able to come back to Parliament. How are we going to do it? We have the SAP 96 on the systems, which will enable us to check. But also, it is concerning because we do have skills development facilitators that are allocated to business units. Their responsibility is to ensure that on a yearly basis, members in line with their PEP agreements, they are the areas of, that need to be developed are identified, and on a yearly basis they then submit the needs that will go into the training provisioning plan for that financial year. And if there would have been those who are illiterate, they will then have been afforded the opportunity to go into the ABET program. As indicated, we'll do the skills audit, and if indeed we have those, we will ensure that they get into the ABET program. In terms of capacitation of the intelligence environment, Honorable Chair, we have already started capacitating the environment, and evident to that, the appointment of the Deputy National Commissioner Crime Detection he was also given the responsibility to ensure that he oversees crime intelligence. But other than that, as I speak now, the post of Divisional Commissioner Crime Intelligence is running, and it will be the closing date is the 9th, and we will be going through the assessment center to ensure that we appoint the Divisional Commissioner Crime Intelligence. We also allocated 109 posts for the environment. They should begin to process the filling of the posts. Those are entry level posts. There will be an advert running internally because we have to recruit from those who will already have been exposed to some work within the service, other than getting new recruits. And then there were also 25 vacant posts of senior management, the brigadiers, which the needs have been identified and forwarded to us. We will be assisting them to ensure that the posts are filled. And with the appointment of the Divisional Commissioner envisaged very soon, we believe the issue of capacity will be dealt with and there will be stability in that environment. The general indicated that we will be coming back on the issues of allegations of sexual harassment in KZN. But maybe to assure the committee that within the organization we have got a sexual harassment policy, and allegations of sexual harassment sexual harassment cases are dealt with in terms of the policy. We are aware of two allegations of sexual harassment in KwaZulu-Natal. One is currently before court, and the other one, there is an investigation. The Divisional Commissioner Human Resource Utilization from Head Office has been assigned to ensure that there is monitoring. And I know for the fact that even last week, if not week before last, he was in KwaZulu-Natal to ensure that what needs to happen is happening. I will personally also make a follow-up with the Divisional Commissioner and together with the province to ensure that the necessary happens in terms of the allegations of sexual harassment, which is a subject that is that one is very passionate with in terms of ensuring that if there are perpetrators, they are brought to book. Thanks. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The next question is with regards to the issue of the Northern Cape protectors that were not paid their overtime appropriately. I know of the issue. It was true that we were not implementing the policy in the SAPS consistently. So, and that has been due to the fact that we operate in unique different environments. And when you look at the environment of protection and security services, the majority of the in majority of cases, they are working a lot of overtime, which happens to be putting a budgetary constraint to the organization. However, during the era when General Mutiba was still acting, we did address this issue. We had meetings and we put together even the people who are responsible for negotiation with the SSSBC agreement, and we have since corrected the situation. So currently, it has been resolved.
General, the information I have doesn't agree with what you're saying to the committee. They say it's still unresolved.
I don't know what would be an issue, because as far as I know, we wrote a letter to General Mutiba, and we explained all the situation with regard to that issue, and also we made examples, because the issue was the budgetary process was changed from that environment, where instead of us budgeting according to the members, we're budgeting according to the VIP, which has been a constraint, because in some instances we'll find that, like the Premier, they will be allocated 5 protectors. So we'll find people sharing 200 hours instead of each having 100 hours. We wrote a letter, everything was motivated, and when National Commission was appointed as the National Commission, General Mutiba has not yet approved it, but immediately General Stolle got appointed, he approved it, and we referred it for implementation to the Division Protection and Security Services. However, I will make a follow-up in that regard.
It's going to be quite important, because, yes. I mean, one of the concerns is in other provinces there's different regimes. I don't know whether it's correct, but I think it's quite important that SAPS management must engage with those protectors and that there is labour stability, because they've got a very important task, and we can't have labour instability. So I think it's important that we get also report back on that. Thank you, General. You can
thank
do
you.
It.
Thanks. Suman?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. In relation to the optimal utilization of informants, I think Honourable Mulebashi is correct. We are also having a guideline that guides the detectives as to how many informants they should have as per the prescripts, but nothing prevents you to go over that. We were meeting after my appointment on the 10th, in January, we also discussed this. I'll be implementing something that will be enforcing the guidelines in relation to this chapter. But also, just want to talk about the issue of the vetting. I think Honorable Mula also spoke about that. I am receiving a report on a weekly basis from the Acting Divisional Commission in relation to this. I think there is an improvement in relation to this. Also, the National Commissioner gave me a task to make sure that most of your very important participants in policing should be able to have the vetting certificate. So I'm having a program that seeks to deal and sort out this scourge, Chairperson. But also, I just want to quickly answer the Chairperson in relation to the high-profile cases that are in court and the issues that are emerging from there. I am being personally tasked by the National Commissioner to look into that. I think we'll be giving a progress report in regard to that, Chairperson. And also, I will also be looking at the criminal case in relation to the sexual harassment case in KwaZulu-Natal, Chair. The 48 hours where people are released after 48 hours, yes, indeed, if you are not being charged, because people are not monitoring people that are in the cells, you will be released. But also, I think it is a problem, it's an indictment on us as the police, because these people can sue the police. That's why we're having some of the claims in relation to this. But we'll look into that as well, Chairperson. It is imperative, and it's an order that after you have arrested the person, you should be taking fingerprints, you should be checking this person, you should be trying to profile, and so that you are able then to link this person. It could be that this person is wanted for many cases throughout the country. And there is a system that seeks also to address that issue. It's just that I think we need to implement this, Chairperson. But these are some of the things that we'll be dealing with in the new financial year, as we have strategized to say what is it that we can do to make sure that we are meeting our mandates. The stock theft, I think Honorable Marke raised the issue of the stock theft. I've taken note of that. I can say that we are having 90 units throughout the country. And we are having some problematic provinces. Your Jericho in Northwest, it's one of the hotspots in terms of stock theft, but also around Lichtenberg as well, and other places in Northwest is also a problem. In Free State as well as Eastern Cape, because they are border near Lesotho, we're also having problems. But I think we are looking into that as well to make sure that we are meeting our mandate in relation to that. The cable theft issues, I think I've noted that, but I know that there are some projects that are being driven to make sure that we address this. Thank you very much.
John Sumani for those responses and also the undertaking to look into those issues. Thank you, General Puma.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm going to request General Masemula to take all questions that relate to visible policing. Over to you, General.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and members. The question about Krugersdorp, Kagiso, yes, indeed. We went there with the minister. There were problems and protests, as you are aware. And we addressed the community. And at the same time, we identified policing issues that needed attention. And we did the necessary deployment. And yes, the cluster commander and the two station commissioners of both Kagiso and Krugersdorp were redeployed. And of course, the minister emphasized that they are not being redeployed because there is anything bad on them, but it's just to give different leadership a chance and see if there can be improvement. Currently, it is stable. We went there to give feedback to the community this past Monday, and they are quite happy. And all the policing issues that we identified in the area, we have a Gauteng team that is put together, as well as the head of his team that is put together, that are dealing with policing around in that area. And we intend to we'll stabilize the area in time, in due course.
Chumula, just a quick follow-up on that matter. I think since the time of General Piecha, the committee really emphasized the need to rotate station commanders, especially those who are in crime hotspots for 12, 15 years, 10 years, 7 years, 8 years. Now, is this step now an acknowledgement by SAPS management that the way to deal with areas where there is possible allegations of collusion or there is not movement against criminal groups, that there will be at least a more concerted effort to do rotation? I just want to get your thinking on that. Or is this an ad hoc?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. You would remember that there was a tasking by this committee in that regard. There is a team that work on a draft national instruction, which is currently led by human resource utilization. So once that strategy has been finalized, and I'm sure then it will be consulted with a view to implement it. But of course, yes, each and every situation will deal with the merits of each case as we go along. Thanks. With regard to a question on the SANDF, Honorable Chairperson, we did engage the SANDF about the issue of deployment, and I know during this week also the National Commissioner did engage the Chief of Defence. So from our side, I think we did what is expected of us, waiting the SANDF, which we always do ask progress, and they do tell us that they are working on the matter. So I'm sure after the meeting recently by the Chief of SANDF and the National Commissioner will expect maybe progress on the matter. That's all what I can report regarding this one. And there was a question about the picking of the stamp being the authority of the state, which was also presented by General Ravi.
what we have done with regard to that, Honorable Chair members, we implemented Operation Fearless, you'd be aware, recently. And the objectives of the Operation Fearless is to deal with, of course, areas like your as it has happened, and also deal with drugs, not necessarily your runners on the street, that will have few, but deal with the real people that are selling the drugs and or manufacturing the drugs, and deal with all other criminality in the society in a decisive way, with teams that will establish at the level of cluster and provinces, and have national programs and drive them from national and province to ensure that we decisively deal with these issues of criminality. Yeah, there was a question about the railway, I think, raised the issue at Germiston. We have taken note of that, Honorable Chairperson, that we are encountering this problem in Gauteng and Western Cape. Over the festive season, we have we had the Divisional Commissioner of Visible Policing with the Praza. They have did certain analysis, and from the National Crime Combat Team, what we are going to do is to put strategies in place that we focus in these specific two areas, because the main problem there is also scrap dealers where these cables are being sold. So we are going to concentrate on that. And we do have railway police, even though not fully capacitated, but we do have railway police that are working in corridors, not stationed at one station, but they work in corridors like your Western Cape and Gauteng North and your Gauteng South. I think, thanks. I think those are the questions raised. Thanks.
General, just one follow-up. The issue of railway police, there was one statement, I think two weeks ago, by the one Praza spokesperson. We said that the security of security arrangements of Praza will now be taken over by SAPS. Is that correct? What is the detail of that announcement? We can just be informed about that. Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, members. Yeah, we have railway police that is doing policing within the rail environment, but you still have got Praza security that is there. But we are in negotiation to look at whether we're going to take over in totality, because Praza is willing to say they can, after negotiations, maybe forsake some of their resources that are used for private security currently, so that we can beef up the numbers of SAPS members in the environment. It is an announcement that we still going to engage and see how we move forward with that. Thanks.
General, that announcement is still being negotiated. I mean, there's no clear implementation date or handover. I just want to get confirmation.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. Yeah, no, it's still an announcement that was made. We said that now in the new year we'll start engaging and looking at figures and areas as to how. So once we have engaged Praza, we'll then come up with time frames as to what's going to happen when. I think there was a question also about people that have been referred away when opening cases. Yeah. As far as we know, we don't have people that have been referred away. Anybody that wants to open a case at the police station is, of course, allowed to open a case. And as long as there is elements of the crime within what one is reporting, definitely the case will be accepted. But if there are specific areas one will be happy to get details so that we can do a follow-up in that regard, Honorable Chairperson. Thanks.
Thank you, General. Honorable Groen, about the follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, no, I'm not satisfied with the answer. I don't expect the General to know about all the cases, but I want to at least hear from top management side that they will either send out a circular to all station commanders or someone to say that they have to attend to this matter. Because if we have to go and send the letter of each and every case, we can do that. But at least I also expect from management side to make station commanders aware of the complaints from people. So at least that is what I'm expecting.
Thank you, Honourable Member. We can go to the other responses. Thank you, General Boomer.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. We will definitely ensure that the circular is circulated to all stations in order to avoid this issue if it is continuing to recur. But people are not supposed to be refused to open the case, because even if it is not within that station precinct, they are supposed to be opening the case and transferring the case, but it will receive attention. The next questions I would like...
I want to thank General B. Because you see the problem, Chairperson, to say, if somebody comes to you and say, listen, they refuse to open the case, the moment you go and you follow it up, they're absent. They just deny that. Because it's the complainant's word against a police officer or whoever is there. So that is part of the problem. How do you prove that the person were not wanted to help? There are certain cases where they take the name and all that sort of things, but not in all cases. So this is, it's a more complex problem that we think.
About the same issue, Imam Sheikh, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, it took me 10 seconds or so. 7th of November, Oranjeville, on leaving at 9:20, 30 people blocked an exit, stormed a combi, and the SAP stood 50 meters away and didn't do anything. So they went to the Oranjeville police station to open a case of intimidation. SAPs refused to open a case. And after discussion with the station commander, they agreed to write it in the occurrence book. That's the sort of typical message that I get on a regular basis. They refuse to open a case. You just stated in this meeting they're not allowed to refuse to open a case, yet there it is. Just one.
Honourable Imam Sheikh.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I must agree, Chair. There are many, many instances where police stations are refusing to open the case, and very importantly, if the matter falls under the jurisdiction of another police station. I don't know whether you could give some undertaking that you could send out a memo to them insisting that when a person comes to lay a complaint, that complaint must be dealt with, does not matter if it's another area. But importantly, what I wanted to add to that is there's a serious problem, it appears, between the airport and a 20-kilometer radius. You heard the situation of the tourists the other day of what has happened, and they went to report, and they did not want to take on the case because the tourist is going to return. Over and above that, there's been a few incidents of those with blue lights reporting to be police officers that may not be, or some were police officers. If you can tell us if there's some progress on that, what is actually going on, because that's making public headlines worldwide.
General
Guma. Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. We will, of course, circulate the circular to all to bring to the attention that they comply. With regard to the problems around the blue light, fake police around come from the airport, we were able to crack the syndicate, Honorable Chairperson. And we have people that are currently behind bars, but there are half of them that are still outstanding that we are looking for them. After we formed a team of detectives together with our uniform from the detective services at the head office. So there we had to make a breakthrough, but there are still some outstanding suspects that are out there which we are still looking for them. Thanks.
Sorry, Honorable Bele.
Thanks, Chair. I'm sorry to come in at the tail end after the General's response, but I do not believe that the intended circular is going to have more than a negligible effect on this problem, because the root of the issue is actually systemic. Because the performance assessments of stations and station commanders is tied to whether they make incremental reductions to especially the community-reported categories of crime, they are incentivized, structurally at least, to ensure that on a year-on-year basis there is a minor drop in the number of cases in various crimes. So that is what feeds into either CSC officers being reluctant to open cases or wanting to categorize them as something else. So, you know, a house break-in will then be opened as a trespassing or whatever the case might be. And it's an issue that has come up before, especially when we have the APP presentations around the targets, is that it's the structural design of how we measure the performance of stations that is systemically incentivizing the officers on the ground to turn people away and to be reluctant to open cases, and that still needs to be looked at. If we don't fix the structural problem, a circular is not going to change those dynamics. And I would also say there also needs to be a proactive element on the part of management to do, I guess you'd call it sort of undercover inspections, where somebody goes and poses as a member of the public to then see how somebody is treated. Because, I mean, I know I get treated differently when I go as a member of parliament to go do oversight. But I've had issues where I'm going just as an ordinary member of the public. And you can see how police stations generally are, or at least many of them, are just stagnant because there's no incentive to have a get-up-and-go attitude. Thanks.
Thank you, Honourable Mbeli, East General.
Thanks, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. We have dealt with this before, where we did take action against station commanders and senior officers in the various provinces where there were consequence management. But however, I take note of what the Honourable Member, Mr. Mbele, is saying, that maybe the way we assess them is a problem. So that, as an organisation, we'll look into it and see how we can maybe work around as to how maybe a better way of assessing them. But currently, where we pick it up, that somebody is interfering or manipulating statistics, we do take serious action on it, and there has been consequences. I'm aware in Limpopo there were people that were fired recently for exactly that. So we do take it very serious. But we'll attend with the relevant components the issue of assessment of station commanders. Thank you.
Thank you very much, General Vuma.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. There are still a few number of HRM-related issues, which I'm going to request General Ngwenya to respond to. There is also the issue with regards to cybercrime environment, which I think General Matakata and General Zumane will collectively respond to. There is also the issue of regionalization, which I'm going to request General Makgatho to touch on it a little bit. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Members. I think it's important. I think we are living in a very modern world, and criminals are very advanced. I think it's important, it's imperative that we need to mesh them toe-to-toe. Now, in the strategy or direction of the National Commissioner, that has been encapsulated as well, because we need to come up with a cybercrime strategy. It is there for all departments, because all of us, we are affected. But we are also going to have your modus operandi analysis center that will seek also to make sure that we get deep into the cybercrime world, Chairperson. Because even the FCS is also having a challenge in that regard. And also for people to be able to rob, they're using cyber as well. So I think that will be implemented during the financial year, and we'll make sure that from time to time, as and when the portfolio committee wants to know how far are we with the implementation of the strategy, I think we'll be able to report the progress. The Oxtra strategy as well seeks us to, or tells us, dictates to us that we should have this type of methodology in dealing with your unconventional type of crimes, Chairperson.
Jamal.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. Just to allude what has been already said by General Tumani, as a South African police, we are obliged to develop and implement a cybercrime strategy and a policy and then an implementation framework. There is already progress in that regard. The policy has been approved internally in the organization. A strategy is being developed that is speaking holistically to all our roles in the service, not necessarily just because DPCI has started this capacity, which is limited. So there is development in that regard. I think the strategy will be presented to the National Commission on Management, and therefore the implementation framework will also be part of that.
Imam Sheikh, on those responses, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. We previously discussed the issue that SEPs were having difficulty with, especially with the social network like WhatsApp and things, in being able to trace criminals, specifically when it came to the ransom demands that were being made and people were being kidnapped. Can you tell us if there's been any progress in trying to shorten the space of times where you could get that information, because that was one of the serious obstacles you had. But the other thing is, in terms of the cybercrime and the banks, there appears to be a very serious problem, and I can tell you I've personally spoken to some of them. Criminals are making demands on employees in the bank to provide the information, and that's where it is coming from. Will you consider, if you haven't done that before, to talk to SAPS, Department of Labor, banking industry, to put in measures so that employees are prevented from giving this information? A lot of them do it out of fear as well. So some measures need to be put in there, because employees are under tremendous pressure from criminals. Thank you.
Maybe just a follow-up on that issue as well. I think we referred previously to the current investigations of DPCI, and I think we welcomed also the focus on the private sector corruption, the Steinhoff matter. Can the head of the DPCI maybe indicate to us, in terms of these specialized forensic investigations, what percentage of your investigation capabilities should you source from outside, or what are you going to do to ensure that you've got the capacity to deal with these very complex cases? Because I think in previous presentations you indicated commercial crime is difficult to keep people. They are scooped up by the private sector. Maybe just your measures to deal with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. With your last question regarding the development of the capacity, indeed we are developing a capacity internally, but all that is still dependent on the structure that has been approved for implementation purposes. So we are not at this point in time to even advertise those posts due to those issues that have referred previously, that we are still hampered by in terms of developing the capacity. So in the meantime, we are dependent on these forensic audit firms that are assisting us in the investigation. Sometimes the auditing firm is being sourced by a department or a bank or whatever, but therefore that report comes to us and we work on it in the investigation that we are undertaking. So that is still the status quo in terms of DPCI not having their own capacity but dependent on outside companies.
There were maybe General Rumor of General Nguyen, yeah. Those discussions in the chamber with the unions finalizing the structure of the DPCI, where are we? I mean, it's now been months and months and months, and there's no movement. I know there was change in the accounting offices, and of course it makes it difficult, but where are we to ensure that the DPCI structure is confirmed?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will have to check specifically for the DPCI. I was not aware of the fact that it was outstanding at the chamber. I will have to check and I will give feedback.
Then we'll give General Matakata an opportunity to continue with the
You see, Chair, the issue of staff management to always tell us this will do that, this will do this, this will do that, and taking it with a small, a snail pace, you know, in issues, it's not helping because crime is fast outside. Crime is very, very fast. So I can, let me plead with you to increase your pace in everything you do. Thanks, Chair.
Right, thank you. General Matakati, you can go to the other responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to also assure the House that in terms of our investigations, when there's reference by Honorable Sheikh in terms of the banks and whatever, we do those investigations. And we are also supported by their own investigative capacity. We have SEBRIC, who's as an overall responsibility over banks. We work with SEBRIC because they have also specialized abilities within the environment. That is, it is enhancing the investigations we are dealing with. So those investigations are taking place, and we are able to uncover a lot of evidence that is contained in any incident, but with the support also of the banking community.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think what I'm saying is I know that is happening. I'm talking about trying to prevent these incidents. So some kind of vetting process. And the reason why I refer to Department of Labour, because of the protection sometimes employees are getting, and it becomes very difficult for employees to take action against them. So some process that you can put the employees in so that we can prevent them, you know, and that gives them good enough reason to tell criminal, we can't, we are checked regularly, we are vetted, and this some kind of thing. So some processes that could be put in, but ultimate aim must be to prevent these things from happening.
General, any responses? Thank you.
As I maybe would imagine, honorable members, that SEBRIC and through their own infrastructure and the banking community will deal with those issues internally. Also because we can give feedback in terms of the investigations, that the involvement of the employees, and therefore the banks would have to put in mitigating steps so that they can ensure that members are not involved in collusion. Or whatever, if there's any need, depending on the on any case, because I think it will depend on the merits of a case. If an employee is being threatened and forced to do, you know, anything that is untoward in the banking infrastructure. But I know the banks are always trying to mitigate those issues and also make sure that their systems are protected for any possible collusion by employees.
Thank you, General. Uma.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. General Ngwenya will respond to the HR-related matters. Thanks. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Feedback regarding the structure of the DPCI, it will be discussed on Tuesday. It has been tabled together with all other structures of the SAPS. Honorable Chair, if I may be allowed, there was an issue raised about the 1448 by Honorable Kola Barnard. Let me begin by indicating that on the 12th September 2018, we were recorded saying that we will be able to account on the 1448. However, because of the court order, we will not be able to continue with the boards which were intended to ensure that we determine whether members are fit or unfit to remain in the service. Pop Crew took us to court, and as a result of the outcome of the court, we could not continue with the boards to ensure that maybe we get rid of the members. I am going to be giving a breakdown of the 1448, and hopefully we will be able to lay this matter to rest. Of the 1448, as we speak today, 491 of the member services has been terminated. And then 403, when the forensic services did an audit, they were found not to be having criminal convictions. 71 of the members were found to have been granted condonation when they entered the service. It will be members who were found to be having not serious offenses. Then 44 of the members disclosed criminal convictions on appointment. And some of these cases will be cases that relate to political activities for the period before 1994. We encourage members to expunge to ensure that they go to the CRC and expunge those records. And then criminal records, in terms of those whose criminal records were expunged, is 225. Members subjected to disciplinary processes, that was before the outcome of the court, 161. Currently, the remaining of the 1448 in service is 53. And maybe to share the court ruling, I am willing to share. It was Pop Crew, Obo, Ngwekazi, and two others versus Minister of Police and the National Commissioner, which gave this order. The convening of fitness board by the National Commissioner of Police in terms of Section 34 of the SAPS Act 66 of 1995 in respect of members who have criminal records as a result of being convicted of statutory or common law offense while serving as members prior 1 September 2013 is unlawful, void, and without legal force and effect. Fitness board convened in respect of such members pursuant to the decision of the National Commissioner of Police were unlawfully convened and have no legal force or effect. Subsequent to this, we also seek for a legal opinion to check as to whether we can challenge this, but the opinion indicated that we won't have any recourse, and we could not go further.
Have you looked at alternative routes? If the courts say that convening boards to determine that SAPS members are criminals is somehow illegal, there must be another way to do this. You have people who are fraudsters and arsonists and bigamists and all sorts of things. I've got the full list. Now, there's got to be a way to get them out of the SAPS. Have you looked at every other possible avenue? You're being swung around by the tail by Pop Crew, who are protecting members who have criminal records, which has been determined by the investigation. Now, you know who they are. Forget the boards and just pull them before a normal disciplinary and say you didn't declare that you actually are convicted of X, Y, and Z, and surely out they should go. Let them challenge it in court. It can't be possible that you've reached a dead end on this matter. I mean, how do we explain to civilians out there that the person who arrested them might actually be a criminal? I mean, it's impossible. It doesn't fly. It makes the SAPS look like a joke. So there's got to be another way to do this.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. We did make visible members who were subjected to disciplinary processes, and it's a total of 161. And maybe through you, Chair, if I can proceed responding to the other questions. In terms of the beneficiaries of the members who got involved in a helicopter crash, as far as I know, we did effect payments, but I will be engaging with Honorable Kola Barnard to check as to whether there would have been outstanding payments. And further,
I know there were those who applied to be included, whose children applied to be included in the SAPS Education Trust. There were technicalities, but we have since taken a decision last year to say, by reason, after we have been advised legally, by reason of the fact that the establishment of the trust was informed by that helicopter crash, they are entitled. And if there are those who will not have applied, we will encourage that they apply. We will consider. I currently sit as the chairperson of the executive committee that is responsible to consider applications for the SAPS Education Trust. In terms of those members who got injured on duty, we have indicated that we do have systems in place. We do pay for their medical accounts. However, the challenge that we had was within the compensation commissioner. They have since appointed another director with whom we have established a good relationship. However, the outcome, the decision that the compensation commissioner will take regarding the payments of the benefits is beyond our control. But within the service, we ensure that we do take care of their medical accounts. But also, if they were boarded, we ensure that their service terminations are taken care of. Maybe also to share, the committee will recall, honorable members will recall that towards the end of 2017, we recorded that we had a backlog of about 7,000 which we had to deal with. And I can report today that of the 7,000 which we reported, as we speak today, we only left with 524. And the backlog is dealt with concurrently with the other service terminations that are coming in. And our performance currently is at 79%. The service terminations are a priority within the organization, and we will continuously ensure that we improve in terms of the systems that we are having. There was an issue raised by Honorable Mthongo regarding the change of curriculum. Yes, even within the SAPS, there is continuous review of curriculum. We have got a directorate that is responsible for curricular development. In line with the legislative changes and all other changes, they continuously review the curricula, but also with the research division that has been established, it feeds into what needs to be looked into in terms of reviewing the curricula to ensure that police stay relevant in the training. Honorable Mthongo also raised the issue of acting positions. As rightly indicated earlier also with the appointment of the DNCs, crime detection, MAS, and also MI, and the adverts which are currently running, that is proof that with the appointment of the National Commissioner, we have already started ensuring that the vacancies are filled, and as we move forward, we won't be having acting people for long periods. The issue of the cluster commander in Etegwini, who was said by the honourable member that he is on suspension, that member was dismissed, and he has lodged an appeal. We are in the process of dealing with the appeal. Thank you, honourable chair.
Thank you, General Nguyenia. Is honourable member Sheikh?
That's just my point. I'm aware that. Thank you. I'm aware that the person has been dismissed, but that's just the point I was trying to make, that for 2 to 3 years we've been trying to resolve that. There's been complaint by the community. There's been complaint by different officers. We've tried to do it. We've had the province involved. Nothing was done. The police was still having the protection. It took 2 to 3 years now to dismiss him. What damage has he done between that 2 to 3 years? And that is what my concern is. So what I'm asking is, what process can you put before the media finds out, before we find out, that you as SAPS can find out your officers are either corrupt or colluding or doing the wrong things? What measures can you put in place?
Thanks, Honorable Chair.
processes in place to ensure that we know about our members. We can only be assisted by our intelligence to get to know if our members are involved. But within the organization, proactively, we have since established an integrity unit also to ensure that members are sensitized about activities which might compromise them. With the establishment of the integrity unit, we are continuously creating awareness, we are capacitating it, and we're also working on the anti-corruption strategy. The framework has now been finalized, and we have agreed with the acting national head of the DPCI to say there is a need for collaboration between the integrity unit within the SAPS and that within the DPCI. We ensure that where there are allegations made within the SAPS, we do not wait for the court or whatever. We commence with the investigation to ensure that we do not have situations where there are criticisms. Chair, thank you.
Yeah, I know, and I think one of the items we have today is the structure. But I think we must deal with that when we have got the National Commissioner present, because actually, again, the response raises the question, what is the task of your cluster commander? What is the task of your station commander? Your whole issue of the management intervention, we need really to deal with that with the National Commissioner, because I think a lot of the members of the Portfolio Committee has got very strong views after this last 2-3 years. So I think let's park maybe that. When we have the conversation with the National Commissioner. But you're welcome to quickly respond. I'm shaking the Honourable Bushlongo.
Thank you, Chair. You know, you put a lot of emphasis on the community policing forums. But when these community policing forums report, because they are the eyes and the ears, they know first what is going on in these communities. SAPs don't pay attention to it, and this is an ideal example. They were complaining for 2-3 years. We've had many meetings. And look at what has happened 3 years later. Then it adds one more thing, and I come back to the issue of when you are appointing these and promoting these SAPS officers and things, should you not also then engage these community policing forums as well? Let everybody make an input, you know, because they know these people. Thank you.
Bushlongo, you're welcome.
No, thanks, Chair. Though then mine is just a bit different, but I think it is in line with this thing. Because, in fact, it made me feel very much pain, too much pain in my heart, that how could it be that a person like this KGB would be said to have been sentenced 10 years and serving 2 years, coming back to serve in the police, is now detected that this man, though arrested by IBID, but is still up to be serving this period. Now, really, no, man. Now, I shall say, now, Jefferson, isn't there a mechanism to detect these things so that, because integrity of police service is very vital in the eyes of the people, if people get this thing as it is just flagged on e-news almost daily, then what does it talk to the integrity of South African police service as a whole? Now, maybe Jefferson, because that man, whether Bob Crook can go to whatever lengths, has been sentenced and found guilty, this thing that he's still going to be facing music under the IBID and whatever, as investigated by IBID, to me is a non-starter. The decision ought to have been taken same day this guy has been arrested and all this thing coming to the fore. To say this person is just dismissed and removed from the South African police role immediately, without any hesitation. You don't, because you don't need any kind of disciplinary hearing on this man. He's a criminal, this person.
Member, responses, General Nguyenya.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We have taken note of the input regarding the promotions. Honorable Chair, KGB has been in the employ of the SAPS till the 20th of 6, 2013. And a letter with reference 053789/1/5 dated the 20th of 6 was signed by Lieutenant General Mazibuko, and it was served to KGB on the 21st of 6 in 2013 while he was in prison to say he has been dishonorably dismissed. On the 26th of 6, 2013, the Division Criminal Intelligence was informed of the dismissal of KGB. And in the same letter, we also requested the Divisional Commissioner to ensure that that the service termination is processed. When members get convicted and then they are in prison, you at times you have challenges of accessing them to ensure that you sign the documents. They do not cooperate. They do not want to sign termination documents. The termination of KGB on the system, the final termination, because he did not cooperate at the time, was on the 30th, 9, 2016. That is finalizing the termination documents. In terms of him working for the SAPS, his service was terminated on the 20th, 6, 2013. But finalization of documentation was on 2016, 9, 30. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Follow up, Honorable Markey. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to clarify myself, or in terms of informers or the PMP, what happens if this person is effective and he was is a criminal, is from prison? What does the regulations or the law say? Can't you take that person as an PMP or as an informer within the crime intelligence to go and infiltrate the sorties, his own, his WhatsApp friends? Thank you.
Well, Mula and then Honorable Kolobana on the same topic. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to know, from 2013 to 2016, was KGB getting his salary for what? Because if you said it was not finalized, or he didn't sign the termination forms or what, was he getting his salary or what? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kolobana.
Yeah, every claim, every story written about him over the years, and I've had reports about this man and his criminal behavior for years and years and years, was that he was paid a full salary right the way through his jail sentence, which he served, and strolled back in to his position in the SAS. So, I think it's important to hear from you whether or not he received the salary. Are all the journalists in the country wrong? I would like to think so. We've had police who've been, or people who've passed themselves off as police officers in the past, it's possible. But it does strike me, as it does my colleague, as most peculiar that it took 3 years to get him out of the SAPS when he's facing such serious charges. Really, 3 years? It's impossible to conceive of something taking that long when the arrogance shown. And again, it smacks of political protection, and I can't stand that.
Thank you, members, for those input. Let's get the responses, General Rumor. General Nguyenya, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. As indicated that his service was terminated on the 20th, once your service is terminated on the system, it has to talk to the finance system so that the payment should not continue. One will have to go back and check as to whether there might have been payments effected after that. But the finalization, finalization, which is dependent on him signing documents, could not have been processing of documentation could not have been done without him having signed the relevant documents, which is what happened in 2016. But in terms of the system, I am willing to even provide proof to say he was terminated in 2013.
Chair, if we could ask if we receive that, please, so that we can put this to bed once and for all, because, of course, the claims are he was paid, went to prison, he was still paid his salary, came out, continued in the job, and was never lost a cent.
Right. Let's go to the other responses, General Rumo.
The other issue that was asked, I think General Tsumane can respond to it with regard to the KGP, if he can be used as an informer.
Now, thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Maki. Within some of the strategies that particular crime intelligence strategy, of which I'm not going to elaborate more or about that, there are certain streams that and also acts that governs us in relation to the informants. You have the one conventional, unconventional, covert, and then those that are overt. Now, in this one of KGB, I'm not going to dwell much on that one, but I think there's nothing that prevents you, generally. I'm addressing a general principle, Honorable Mike, that if a person is good for you to be able to penetrate that underworld, you can identify a person and handle that person accordingly. Thank you very much.
General Tsumane, General Rumo, any other responses?
I think according to my notes, Honorable Chairperson, there's one of that too. There's one that has asked General Makha to respond to. There's also one that was asked by Honorable Mbele with regard to the strategy as to what went wrong. Since now I'm going to request Major General Arabi to respond to that. Otherwise, most of the questions are more of a comment, which we have noted, and we will be able to really attend to that. Thank you. Over to you, General.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question that talks to rationalization, which I think we were here sometimes last year, that we were embarking on a rationalization. Yes, indeed, we did some work within the organization. The process is still ongoing, particularly at the level of consultation within and with our with the SSSPC. But it's also been impacted by developing projects. We concluded the assessment of the clusters. We also concluded the assessment of the police stations. And there's an element of the regionalization, which we said that we will pilot only in Gauteng. So those processes, they run concurrently. Their intention is basically to bring the resources to local level. So I believe that we would have interest, particularly when we were enhancing the clusters we came here. And so we can even give you a report in terms of that one and just give you a case for change. Thanks very much.
General Ravi, thank you.
Thank you. The question relates to the obstacles or problems or deficiencies that we've identified in the past that led to the now the development of the turnaround vision. Now, Chair, what is important is that over time the SAPs have implemented a number of strategies to combat crime, and these strategies have in some areas we had success, in some areas we have limited success. If you take, for instance, into consideration the back-to-basics approach that was implemented around about 2 years ago, Now, as far as that is concerned, we are now constantly, we are seeing a constant decrease in crime levels, for instance, but we also see that in terms of certain environments like the detection rate for serious crime in certain categories, we are not on the level that we want to be. So those are the factors that we had to take into consideration. Some of the others, some of the other issues that we've identified that also had an impact, for instance, includes the imbalances in the distribution of resources that we've identified within SAPS. Now, that that necessitated the implementation of a more scientific approach to determining resource demands and allocating those resources and making sure that we have an equitable distribution of resources. There's also a notable slow progress in terms of implementing latest or the latest technology in the fight against crime. Taking into consideration what has been said as far as the cybercrime is concerned and our capability to deal with matters relating to cybercrime. Also, these gaps or inadequacy in terms of our capability to analyze crime, to understand criminal behavior, to analyze modus operandi, etc. Also, something that we had to take into consideration was the latest report on the community perceptions on safety and security. And it's obvious that although we are achieving certain levels of success in terms of crime going slowly down, there are still negative perceptions as far as crime is concerned. Then we also, in terms of the policy and legislative requirements, we found that some of them are not fully implemented due to budgetary constraints. For example, the Child Justice Act and some of these new legislation and policy developments that took place, and we have not fully implemented that because there was never a process that we went to determine the exact resource requirements associated with implementing this. And then lastly, as another example, Jay, is that we found that not saying that there's no engagement with stakeholders, but it's inadequate. There are a number of stakeholders that we can engage in the fight against crime. And the intention is to revive these engagements with stakeholders so that we can optimally utilize them. So those are just mentioning a few of the aspects that we had to take into consideration and that the National Commissioner mentioned, according to him, that informed the decision that we must implement a turnaround strategy. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Honourable Bailey.
Thanks, Chair. Just a brief follow-up on one of the points that Mr. General Robbie outlined. Is the THRR, the Theoretical Human Resource Requirements, is that still the tool being used to determine human resource allocation at stations and clusters? And if so, has the formula been reviewed and refined since the findings about it were made in the Khayelitsha Commission, what's it now, 3-4 years ago. Thanks.
Ellie? General Guma?
I'm going to request General Makhatu to respond to that one. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, the tool that we used to still remain as the Theoretical Human Resource Requirement in its name. After some number of researches and comments from various parties, there are elements of it that are changing. We were supposed to have been at a stage where we move into various discrimination in terms of its application. But because of this clarity that we are not reaching, we are not able to move with that one. So on regular basis, every year we do assessment, we change. The challenge with the THRR so far, if we have to repeat it, it is the utilization of the resources that we currently have. Some places is too much, some places is too less. And that is one specific issue that we need to deal with. The one basic challenge that we recognize because we have created it is we said everything is equal. The phase forward to say not everything is equal, and that is the positive discrimination that we wanted to start introduce, but we cannot move to that one until we clear this level where we are now. But we are on top of it.
General Rumor, is that all the responses?
Yes, that's all in terms, Honorable Chair, in terms of the questions of
Answered. The only outstanding one is the one for the recruitment of the white officials, which General Mbonyi is going to respond to. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We do promote white people within the organization, and maybe on a lighter note, General Rabi is one of them. There are a number of them. We are willing to forward a list to Honorable Colabar, to Honorable Groenewald. I am sorry. But also, we would have appreciated if he were to assist us in terms of recruiting white trainees, because it is a challenge for us. We do need them, and they will get promotion opportunities within the organization. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much. Yes, Honorable
Chair. It's just the one that I did not get a response that I'm satisfied with, and that was the issue of the South African National Defense Force. We even gave specific dates that they were going to be deployed in December.
The General Masumula answered that.
No, yeah, but Che, the response wasn't, you know, you just said there's discussion, but my understanding is this, there were public statements as well. On a specific date, they will be deployed, and this was in December already last year. Are you experiencing any difficulties or some challenges in being able to implement it? Because clearly there appears to be something, some challenges that you're facing. Or else they were supposed to have been deployed before the festive season. We had that assurance to go out there and clean out these townships and things like that. Thank you.
Hello, William Shaikh. General Bruma.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. It's a difficult question. It's SANDF and SAPS. So the response of SAPS is as I've given. We are engaged SANDF, and there are processes within SANDF that they must follow before they can be able to give us. So they are busy with those processes. Time frame, unfortunately, can assist, and we keep on reminded, like I said, recently there was a meeting of the two chiefs of the armed forces, so I expect maybe to hear soon from them. Thank you, Jefferson.
Honourable members, we're going to move to the Operation Safe festive season, but again, high level. I think the first 3-4 pages, General Rabi, we know. We have that briefing in November, so I think the success is yes, Honourable Market.
My apologies, but I was thinking to myself, or at some stage, we were invited to a strategic planning session of SAPS somewhere in Cape Town some time ago, if I'm right. If I was just thinking to myself, or if they have their strategic planning, if maybe we wouldn't be infringing on anything, if we could be invited. I remember it was during the General Pierre's time, somewhere in Cape Town. Maybe it might make a bit of a difference if we could be invited when they deal with, when they unpack some of these things. Maybe when we come back, we also would be owning that, knowing exactly how did they go through this. I'm just thinking aloud and suggesting. Thank you, Chairperson.
You, Honourable Member, but the separation of powers will make it very difficult for us to attain such a strategic planning, but I mean, I think an effort can be made at committee level maybe to have more detail, but for us to be actively involved in the shaping of that at the official level or executive level will be